Hey folks, quick announcement. We have a live podcast coming up Wednesday, June 19th at 7 p.m. here in Austin, Texas at Strange Brew. It's a great listening room. So if you're in town in Austin, Texas on Wednesday, June 19th at 7 p.m., come on out to Strange Brew and join me and my guests, Nakia, The Boxing Lesson, AJ Vallejo, and Jazz Mills, whose music you're hearing right now. Wednesday, June 19th, 7 p.m., Strange Brew, Austin, Texas. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're doing well. I'm Johnny, I'm your host. I've got a great show for you today. Producer, musician, songwriter, Jonas Wilson is here today. I've got a long history with Jonas. We talk about stuff. It's a great conversation. Stick around, you'll enjoy it. Me, how am I doing? Pretty good. How are you? I hope you're doing good. Hope you had a great weekend. I did. I played some Skyrocket shows this weekend. I played at Cedar Street on Friday. And man, I had this thing happen at the end of the show, which happens sometimes at these shows. People get really, really drunk. And a lady was following me around while I was kind of tearing down my stuff, telling me how cocky she thought I was. But she was so drunk that her face had kind of become distorted. And she was sweating, and her makeup was sweating off. So she just kind of looked like the end of the night. And not the good end of the night. And slurring, and like, you're just cocky. Why are you so cocky? You're cocky. It's just like, God. You know, what I really wanted to say was, at least I'm not some fucking... She looked like at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark when those guys' faces are melting off. That's what she started to look like. Except it was all puffy. Like it was going to explode in my face. Anyway, it was crazy. There was this whole group of women that was just... I mean, there was a whole bunch of people. But there was this whole group, and they were all just drunk, and there was a girl, like, making out with a dude in the corner, and then the other lady was yelling at her, and it was just fucking, it was a wreck. It is a human train wreck at the end of those shows. Anyway, I did have a good time. I think the band sounded really great that night. We had a good time playing. And the next night, we went to Houston and played a gig at a country club there. That was good. It was a wedding, and, you know, people seemed happy. They had a great time. I had a good time playing. And anyway, came home yesterday. Wasn't feeling too good and did a lot of sleeping. And today I'm going to write a song with my friend Sara, whose comedy videos I've been in over the last couple of months. I don't know if you guys have seen them. I'll post them on the page. Hey, speaking of the page, you got to go out there. Get on Facebook. Like our Facebook page. How did I get here? Okay? Go there. Like it. Also, go to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you do not do that. Leave a comment, rate it, do what you got to do to make it happen, all right? That's what I want you to do. Also, today I'm going to go finish off a poster that I'm making Todd Wolfson's making it, actually, for the show, for the live podcast June 19th at Strange Brew with Nakia, AJ Vallejo, The Boxing Lesson, and the fabulous Jazz Mills. Don't you just love it? That's going to be a great one. All right, I guess I've taken up enough of your time. Let's get down. All right, my guest today is producer and engineer, musician primarily known for guitar, Jonas Wilson. He actually played guitar in my band Gowdy about 11 or 12 years ago, and then he also has played guitar with What Made Milwaukee Famous, Alpha Rev, My Violent Life, Lomita, The White Lights, Elijah Ford, and The Bloom, a lot of different bands. And as a producer, he's also worked with me. We did an album together. Called El Payaso with my band Johnny Gowdy and the Little Champions a few years ago. And he's about to release his solo album, which is called The Plastic Habit. That's the band. And the EP is called Out of the Airlock. Jonas is a great guy. This is like his first thing where it's him out there singing and doing the thing. He did Lomita with Ricky Ray Jackson. You might remember a few episodes ago, Ricky plays guitar with Alejandro. They did a lot of stuff together. Lomita was a favorite band of mine. Anyway, Jonas is a great guy. I've known him for years and years. We played together. We've spent a Christmas together. Our dogs are friends. And yeah, there's a lot of connection there. And we have a great talk. Jonas is a studio owner. He's got a studio. He's out there. You can go out there and record with him. He's a great engineer, great producer, and a great guy with a good story because he started out a young guitar hero. All right, let's get into it, man. This is my friend, Jonas Wilson. Have you ever? Are you scared to do that? You want to use this? You
scared
can use those headphones,
man.
If you can. Are you really?
Yeah, totally. I'm just, you know, scared in that dumb kind of way, like in a.
You're scared in a little bit more.
Sorry. You know, no, it's all good. Yeah, I'm scared shitless of it, man.
What are you gonna do a release show?
Yeah,
you gotta,
on June 22nd at Frank, and it's us, the Gorgeous Hands, you know, doing everything.
Who's the Gorgeous Hands? You work with them?
No, I've worked with them a few years back when they were a different band, but they're now, they're a pretty cool bunch of kids. Or I guess they're about in their early 20s, but really good pop rock, you know, which is nice.
It's fucked up to have you already be here for like 10 minutes and throw the word kids out twice, because to me,
I'm a
kid.
I've always been a kid. But I'm a kid
when,
to you.
Yeah, when did
but
I meet you?
I'm 31
you? When did we
now.
Meet? 31.
I'm 31, Johnny. Jesus, you met me when Christ. I was like 19. We've known each other for like 12 years now.
But
man.
I saw you before then.
You saw me.
I saw you when you were a kid, guitar guy.
Yeah, that was Jesus, man. So yeah, that's too long.
How did you transition from that? Because you went from like guitar guy to a different.
I don't know. I just got interested in other things. You know it. You know how it goes, man. Like
sure.
Working with you was a big thing. Like when I was 19, it was like, you know, right. That was. You were a big step out of my blues guitar world.
Is that what you were doing before then?
No, I was doing that band, The Wake. I think that's where
right,
I met you.
Right,
I had this band called The Wake, and it was just, you know, we were together for like 6 months. So we were working with like
Kyle
Ellison.
That was a great band.
It was a cool band. I listened to some of that, came back up because I lost most of the masters of everything I had that was like from that era, you know? It's like all that
fire?
Yeah. So all that was gone, so it's kind of like, but so whenever I find stuff, I've kind of, had the joy and, you know, embarrassing listen back to like anything I could find.
Yeah.
Like just going, oh, what do I still have a copy of? What don't I? Who do I show? You know, and trying to just get copies of things that I've done. There was this girl, Emily Ash. She was fantastic.
Yeah,
we lost touch, but I hung out with her in Chicago a few times for a few years later.
Is that where she moved to?
She moved there for a while, and then I think she moved back to San Marcos, and I think she lives there. I just lost touch, you know, as happens.
Yeah,
know?
As that happens. And that fire, that was the Bastrop fire of 2011.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I remember saying something on this show around that time about because you had a thing on there because you had lost you lost everything.
Yeah, you know, but it's okay. I mean, we came out. I came out on everything was fine. People helped us out, and you know things worked out. So it wound up just like all those kinds of weird things. Sometimes kind of just clean slate sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
It's a good thing sometimes.
And that was the studio you moved into that after you moved into the one that we made the El Payaso album in?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I moved to it. There was a studio in between that. And that was where I did like the Happening stuff and I was doing the White White Light stuff in this little kind of commercial space over by St. Omo, like right by Music Lab over there.
How was that? I never went there. What was that about?
It was this room I built and kind of did everything myself in. I like built the walls, built the eyes booths, did everything, and then I sank
Jesus,
in.
Jesus, man, you've put a lot of studios together since I've known you, like five or six of them.
Yeah, I've sank in, that one sank in rent and, you know, and in bills because I was doing the Jonas thing and, you know,
And you, but you were coming out of coming, yeah, not charging,
not charging people.
Well, it seems like the guys that do cool work end up being the guys that, you know what I mean? And the guys that do, you know, shitty ass things that do, like, whatever, housewife, ladies, husband's rich, and she has the dream of doing. I'm sure that you've done your share of those.
We've all
done our share of that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, those are the things that eventually pay the bills. But, you know, you wind up slaving and doing.
Well, to me, this is what happens to me, is that it comes in waves. Like, sometimes I'm like, look, I got to get serious with my life. I got to pay some fucking things. I got to suck it up. And you know what? Music's music, and I'm going to make the most out of this thing. And then you do that once or twice, and I have actually done it once. And that I can say I did a whole record of someone that I just was like, wow, what am I doing? But they're paying me. So what the fuck is, you know, what's my... But then the backlash of that is, then you're like... Fuck it, I'm only going to do this shit. And then you go through a couple of months where it's really hard to pay rent because you're only doing cool things for people that you think are cool.
That's what happens. It's totally, you nailed that, man. It's like, I make some money and then I feel like I have some art. It's okay. I'm going to just do some projects.
I can make
really
it just
love.
Doing the project. Yeah, yeah.
And then you go broke and then you kind of come back. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I think that happens with everyone. You know, I just talked to Mark Hallman the other day. Who's, you know, ahead of us in years and career and still, you know. But it's amazing he's been able to keep a studio open and thriving all the time.
It is, you know, because the studio age is definitely gone, like that kind of studio age. So I think
you came into the studio age when you had the place out in San Marcos.
Yeah.
Right when it was ending.
And that was an easier thing. That was with, you know, like... That was in
a parent's
place.
Or something.
Yeah, well, I originally had like a little 8-track set up. That was when you first met me. You came out and... I was doing like those Wake records on like 8-track and stuff, you know, and that was fun, and I missed that in some ways. You know?
Shit, yeah, man.
I think that's kind of the funny thing is you start acquiring, you know, you get all the things
this
you really need,
makes it easier and it's cheaper and then, faster,
and then you kind of yearn for like the how creative you had to be when you didn't have tools.
Yeah,
I think you wind up with some of your best ideas that way sometimes, is not having tools. So
yeah. I think you and I have always bonded on that kind of like fun recording thing where you, instead of having a plug-in, you run your shit through actually like guitar pedals and you're singing through a fucking fuzz pedal.
It's more fun.
Yeah,
it is more fun. And you just wind up with a unique sound that brings other things into it. So me and you have always seen that eye on that.
Yeah,
I think.
Who have you been working with lately?
Well, tonight I'm going in, I'm mixing some stuff for BP Fallon and, then I did a track with him and the Ghost Wolves the other night, like a week ago. He had kind of a protest song, you know, a bit of a gun control song that's very, very cool, and I'm very excited to be a part of it. I'm very excited that he let me in. He was a super nice guy.
Yeah.
Just cool, coolest old rock and roller I've met, you know. Really neat, sweet guy. And then the Sweet Nothings have been in, and Mike Boer from Zykos, and... just did that, the Dial Tones record for Lauren, you know, for her who's playing on Plastic Habit stuff.
She's been on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She mentioned that.
Enjoy her.
And then, you
know, I love her playing.
She's amazing, man. Yeah. And it was like, I wanted to sing and kind of be front guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, me, I'm pretty picky about guitar players. So I was like.
Definitely. Yeah.
But it's been great. We've got this really fun, weavy thing that's developing and new stuff. I'm really excited for that guitar, for the next record, really, for guitar stuff. You know, I think this record coming out is, I'm excited, but I think it's also a pressure on myself, just like do something with my voice at the front and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
What's the style? Because I haven't even heard it. This is going to be cool.
It's pop, you know? I mean, it's good. So it's the songs I thought were good, and they didn't fit into, you know, I think it's pretty loose recording. I was listening to a lot of, like, you know, like The Only Ones and like Peter Parrott kind of stuff, and like really into that kind of 70s pub rock thing, like, you know, lots of like Brizzly Schwartz and early Nick Lowe and like, you know, that kind of a thing. And I think melodically there's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of, you know, rip off of that going on.
Yeah, yeah. You're Nick Lowe? Are you Nick Lowe?
I'm a
guy?
Giant Nick Lowe guy. Yeah. Wow. Giant Nick Lowe guy these days. Just anything like Stiff Records, really, I love. I mean, like, you know, love Reckless Eric and stuff like that, and kind of really gone down that road. And I think that's what I was in my head I was trying to do.
Yeah.
Whether or not that whether or not that was actually what came out with it.
What ended up happening.
You know how it goes, man.
Yeah, sure.
You start with this this vision in your head, and then it just kind of morphs into whatever happens in the room, and you have to be a slave to that and just go, this is where it is, and what's good about this.
So when you were doing that, did you have an engineer guy?
No, I did it myself.
You just were engineering, you're kind of there by yourself, or did you always have kind of people around?
I mean, the band came in, and really what happened is, you know, this band got together, and it was really fast, man. I didn't really know what I was doing anymore, and I just kind of, this band had been dabbling, it had been a little side project thing for me with just a bunch of, I had like a group of 50 fucking songs that I had not done anything with, and
right.
I was just like, some of these, there's at least, you know, at least a few good ones in here.
Right.
It's like, there's something in here worth putting out or worth doing something with, so I was getting bored, the white lights were slowing down, and things were kind of shifting gears with that a little, and that band was kind of on the decline as far as breaking up and, you know, things like that, personal things coming in the way of a band like usual, and, you know, so that band was on the decline, and it was just kind of watching another thing go, and I was just like, well, fuck it, I'm gonna keep working on something. So I just started recording some demos, and then met some of these people that I'm currently working with, and just, you know, I think you know how it goes, man.
Hey, you want to hang out and play some things?
And we did that, and I booked a show that was, you know, for the White Lights, kind of like that we couldn't do. And I was like, well, I'll do it. I got this other thing, and I got some songs, and let me go play
Habit.
Yeah, and put a name on it, and then they came out in, like, September, and we really started cutting. We just did a weekend, really, and we just kind of came in and cut a bunch of stuff live, and everybody was still working parts out, and then the band started playing more, and I did some demos that I just kind of put out just to get some gigs and stuff with from that. And then a lot of this is just kind of, you know, hey, the demo wasn't bad. Let's just go back in and, you know, fix a few little things and then be done with it.
Yeah.
So it actually, I was listening to what The Rough Side Burned, and I was really excited because I was just like, man, it's pretty bare. It's not like crazy stacked, which I like. You know, I wanted to make something a little more just, it's two guitars, bass and drums, and there's a little organ part here and there, but like really simple elements. I'm playing mostly like just power chord kind of stuff, you know. Right. That's fun.
That's cool. was the white lights was different than that? It was
the white lights more
bombastic.
Yeah, it was just more, you know, it was more like, I can throw my guitar into an amp and, you know,
right.
I can be crazy dickhead on stage, you know.
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing. And
Do you ever get, for instance, Gowdy was asked to play a show. And so we just kind of like sent this email to the other guys from the original ones.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah. And everyone's reaction also is kind of like, do we have to be really loud? Or do we, like, I don't want to have to be real loud. Like, you know.
Well,
I'm in a different space now. I don't think I could even handle like 20 minutes of doing that. It seems like it would exhaust me. My brain.
I think there's nights where I want to do that, but I think that's kind of the fun of it these days. I've had fun with this in a weird way. And kind of, you know, in a what do people actually respond to kind of way.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I've gone in and I've gone like, okay, I'm just going to stand on this stage and I'm not going to play up the performance. Like, I'm not going to add that in. I'm just going to see how my songs do. If I just stand up here and just play these songs really well at a comfortable volume and do that.
We sound like old guys now.
We do. But what's funny is, you know, I laugh because, like, I can play that exact same set and play it not as well. And people don't respond, which is, you know, it's sad, but I think people are very visually...
Or don't respond.
A lot of them don't respond as much, and that's kind of what, you know, like, and it's just funny to watch that, because you're like, it's the same music.
Yeah.
I can do this in this, I can play exactly the same part, but if I'm jumping around like a jackass, people seem to care.
Right.
So, you know, there's, but in the same right, I'm looking at ways now where, you know, how do you be a David Byrne? You know, how do you be somebody that's performance art with this? You know, there's a fun way to be interactive with an audience that doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, I'm going to throw everything around and be, break my instruments, which is that's an easy primal aesthetic to add to anything. And I think, and it's fun and it's aggressive. And people respond to those live shows. They do. There's no doubt about it. From like a rock perspective, people go home feeling
like they got rocked.
Like they got rocked, exactly. Yeah. You know, when it's loud and when it's over the top. But that's just, that's such a one-sided view of music, you know? And it's really hard to kind of find a creative way to not have to do that and still be grabbing, you know? And that's kind of, that's the hunt that, you know, like I want to find. I mean, I think.
How are you going to put it out?
I'm doing it myself.
Right. But you're gonna make CDs?
I'm doing CDs right now for just because this first thing is just an EP right now because I had a full length kind of in my head. And the more I thought about it, I just like, when the more the band played, the more a sound kind of started to happen that I feel like is...
All right, so you stripped it back to what made sense.
I stripped it back to what made sense to me with, like, what's coming.
Right.
You know, and it was more like an EP to me. And I just... Because I just didn't know where it was going, and it feels like this is kind of... It's taking a direction now. You know, I'm trying to do it and let it be something, you know, regardless of being nervous as hell to put my voice on anything anymore.
Really?
Did
you do cool shit like those guys did, like double it a lot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's doubled and done fun like that, and, you know, it's... Okay. Which I like. I always love that era of production. And you know, there's a lot of, like... There's a lot less cymbals on songs and things like that. It's kind of more... Like I said, it's a weird thing. There's lots of fuzz and weird things, but it's very, like, kind of simple, plotty beats, and things are very... It's a simple record, really. I think there's complex things happening more secretively.
Right.
They're not as... anything that I was trying to be musically fun with, I made sure it was kind of buried, you know? Okay. Like...
Right.
Everything else is just like, no, this is simple. It's melody and vocal and you know, I don't want to overstack this. And I think that's kind of the direction that the band's going to take, you know? That seems to be what I became, at least what I got happy with when I've been wrapping it up right now and going like, okay, this is finishing. And it's like I'm mixing next week and then it's going to mastering and it's done, and, you know, and that's kind of, yeah.
Who's your mastering person?
I'm hoping that Jim Wilson can do it, but I'm also hoping that my budget permits, because
and plus he's pretty busy.
So if not, I'll, you know, I've got a few other people. I might send it to... I was gonna see if, you know, Dave McNair would do me the old favor.
I like Dave.
Dave's crazy busy though. I mean, Dave's doing Bowie.
Oh, he is.
He did the new Bowie record.
No way.
Yeah,
god damn it. You know what happened is I was supposed to do this with him last fall, do a podcast with him in New York when I was there, and I didn't have time. Now I lost him. Now he's gonna be like, fuck off, I'm too huge. No, he's not. He's so nice.
Dave was the nicest guy.
He was a guy early on that like started writing me on Facebook going like, holy shit, I can't believe this is a thing. I love it. And him and Robin,
yeah,
I guess, rocked this show. All right, well, let's go back. So you're from Victoria. Is that where you were born there?
I was born in I was born in San Antonio. We moved to Victoria when I was about 3.
Okay. So you grew up in Victoria.
Yeah.
And you have a sister.
I have two sisters.
Two sisters.
And a brother.
And a brother. Yeah. Okay. Well, they're all older, right?
No, I have a little sister, and she's, you know, med school. And
oh, yeah?
Yeah. She has a kid, my nephew Gage, and then my other sister has two babies, and, you know, she's... mom and husband's lawyer, and, you know, things like that.
We've
all migrated back this way. My sister's been living in Austin up until about a week ago. She went back to med school because she kind of put herself through, you know, as a single mom recently, which is very impressive.
That is very impressive.
So she went back and she's been doing that, and then
and your dad's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom also?
My mom also, yeah.
Jesus.
So.
Was there pressure?
No, you know, surprisingly, my parents... I mean, I think
incredibly supportive.
They've been amazing.
Driving you around the gigs and stuff, which we'll get to in a minute. But
they did amazing things for me. You know, I can't...
Always real nice.
Complain. What's that?
They're always very nice.
They're extremely nice. And they're so accepting of what I am and who I am and, you know, being broke and being me.
Right. But they didn't lay a trip on you going on early on, like, you know.
I think my mother was nervous, you know, when I was like 12, because I came in and said I wasn't going to go to college, and I was
it's a pretty early time to
like, right when I was like a week after I started playing guitar, I'm like, no, I'm going to be in rock bands, and this is what I'm going to do. And
what was the thing that what was the thing that got you a guitar for? Why? What was the impetus?
Oh, it was the. It was 92. It was Nirvana. That was the only thing that reached Victoria, you know? Like, because Victoria...
Right, because it was so mainstream.
There was... Exactly. It was so mainstream. Yeah. And there was no record stores in Victoria, really. There was one in the mall, like, you know, like a disc jockey store in the mall. And that was, like, the only record store in town. So... Yeah. And my sister, game changer, she went to boarding school at St. Stephen's in Austin. So... Oh,
okay.
So she came back and, you know, it was like, you know... Hey, Jonas, this is, you know, this is pot and this is, you know, like, this is music, you know? Like, so that was kind of, that was an epic event at a young age in Victoria. It was just a totally different side of culture than I'd ever seen, like, growing up in Victoria, you know? So, so she would bring back records that her friends were listening to and stuff. And then also she had friends that were all into, like, The Doors and Hendrix and, you know, whatnot.
And you didn't know about that?
I didn't know about that stuff. I mean, that was how I found out, you know? And that was kind of like hearing Hendrix and stuff like that. And then obviously I went through my blues fetus years.
Right, the blues fetus. God bless John Sanchez for that fucking phrase. Okay, so did you go back? Did you like get Hendrix and then Stevie Ray and then like, oh, who are these guys into? Buddy Guy and then whoever, B.B. King or whoever.
I went back, and you know, I mean, I went to a little camp when I was a kid because my parents didn't know what to do with me when I was like 12 because I was so into
smoking
guitar,
pot and listening to Hendrix.
Oh, you know, no, I mean, that was terrible, right, right. But yeah, it was like I was mostly, my parents were very like, what do you do with a kid that's only interested in guitar and not interested in sports? Because that was just foreign to them, you know? Like,
right.
So, and at that time, there was
And I'm
not...
sure it seems weird, too, because immediately when you start doing that, you exile yourself into your bedroom all the time.
Yeah, that's what happened.
And then you're just real weird.
And then I was just the weird kid in
the
neighborhood.
Yeah. No, totally. I was that guy, too.
So that completely happened to me at that age. I think that's a similar story for most
everyone.
Of us,
as soon as you discover it, you're like, well, you have to... You have a long way to go when you're
exactly.
like, okay, I'm going to do this. But you're like at that fucking step one and you just are, you know, and you have time when you're a kid like that.
Yeah. The kids I'm working with today, it amazes me because they just had the access they have. You can tell them something.
I know.
And they see everything. So like, I mean, working with Residual Kid for years, it's like, you know, those kids blow me away because they come in and I can talk to them about a band, and the next week they know their whole catalog. They've studied everything. They can tell me tunings these guys are using. They know what pedals they're using. They know every detail that, you know, God, if we only had that access.
A few years ago, I was at a Skyrocket show, and I guess it's whenever I first got a smartphone, which is whenever they were first coming out. So say like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, is that when they came out? I don't know. Whenever it came out, you could watch YouTube on there.
Yeah.
So we decided to do Get Back, and I was like, oh, shit. What if I can learn that solo real fast in between sound check and the gig?
Yeah.
YouTube, boom, a video of a dude fucking teaching you how to
Michael
play.
Michael McDonald for me at Mott's gigs, man. You know, playing keys, it's like, take it to the streets. What's that crazy chord at the beginning, you know?
Oh,
it's like,
yeah, I didn't even think about that.
No, like Kincaid throws that stuff on me all the time when I show up at those gigs, you know? It's like whenever I'm doing
so he still does
gigs.
Those it's called, that's the Mott's,
well, it's more of a Rolodex than a band, you know.
What was it was called something else, Yacht Rock, when he did it. What, at Frank's,
he
it
did
was karaoke,
he did the Yacht Rock thing, but that was still, I think he renamed it for that specific event.
Oh, it is. Okay.
But the Mott's was really what it was.
And that's who played Elijah and Ashley's wedding? I didn't go. Okay. Okay. Did you play?
No, I was just hanging.
So do you play with him some?
Yeah. I mean, with Milwaukee when he calls, when I can, and when, you know, with... Man, I'm going to play with whoever calls, you know, still.
So let's go back. You're 12, 13 years old. You're trying to find fucking records. You got no internet in this place.
Yeah.
And you were stuck in like a small town with one record store.
Yeah.
With probably just greatest hits of things that you would probably want to get into.
Yeah. I mean, you know, randomly, you know, some of the things that I think I discovered at a young age was just because of the era, because of things like Nirvana.
Right.
That was popular, so you had them talking about bands like Sonic Youth.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah. Even before I was into blues and stuff, I was into that stuff, you know? Like, I got those records early on.
Oh, okay.
I remember I got, like, I didn't even know who they were, but I liked the album cover to, like, Jesus and Mary Chain, and I got, like, that Stoned and Dethroned record.
Yeah, yeah.
So at my blues covers, you know, I used to cover the Come On song that was on there, like, on that record.
Okay, yeah,
so I was doing, like, Jesus and Mary Chain in the middle of blues sets even back then, though.
Right. So that makes sense.
It was just kind of a weird thing that I found that and I thought it was cool. I didn't know I heard these other bands that I thought were cool characters mentioned, but they were like characters in a TV show to me or in a book, you know? It was like, the lifestyle they were seemed to be part of was so foreign, I think, into some kid in Victoria.
Right.
So it was just like, I couldn't imagine being at like clubs in New York and like listening to, like you read about Sonic Youth at that age and you're just like, what is this?
Yeah.
This goes on in
places.
But how
were you finding this stuff?
Just from books whatever and... Rolling Stone things or guitar players or whatever I could find on the shelf, you know? I mean.
Okay.
And then like I said, my sister had some, like her freshman year of that high school in St. Stephen's, she got some roommates that were way into like music. Smashing Pumpkins and things that were coming out at the time, you know, and that whole early 90s kind of boom and that fascinated me.
Did you ever have a band with guys your age back then or did you immediately move into a different?
I did. I had a band like, but we were mostly playing, Kevin McCullough was in that band. If you know Kevin from, he plays with everybody in town.
Oh really?
Yeah. Kevin does a lot of stuff, but Kevin was, another Victoria kid and he does a lot of like, I think he kind of is more involved in like church things here these days. Kevin's very in that world, but he's like Sweeney plays with them and other people around town. Kyle Schneider plays with them and, you know, and I think Lonnie played with them for a long time, like Trevino, lots of that kind of, you know, that part of Austin was very, knows Kevin very well. But right. Kevin with me had a band called
90s Dudes.
Well, no, UB40 was very popular, but we were WeeB 12. And then we immediately changed to Toxic Dogs and then we had our first show and broke up, you know.
WeeB 12. That's fucking awesome. Jesus Christ. Because you were 12?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I was actually 11. You win. They were 12, you know?
Yeah, that's a great fucking name.
We didn't have it. We had a snare drum and a cymbal, and we had a Casio that I still had for up until the house burned that was like, we would push Casio beats on and play, and we would like play like, we were doing everything. It was like his taste, my taste, and our drummer's taste, and we were doing, I mean, everything that was popular at the time. So it was like, Kevin was like, I want to do Hootie and the Blowfish covers.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and I was doing like, you know, they would only let me sing Territorial Pissings by Nirvana.
Right.
Which is really funny because yeah, like, you know, I've taught that in recent years. But it's really funny, like, yeah, they would only, because they were like, yeah, you can sing one that you just have to scream and don't have to sound like anything because my pitch was terrible and
right.
You know, and then the Game Changer in the Blues thing happened. Kind of after that split, my parents sent me to this little, they were looking for summer camps that were in music
involved.
And so they sent me to Connecticut because the only thing they found was this National Guitar Summer Workshop. And that was very weird at the time. It was like a good, you know, but they did guitar clinics and it was like a week long thing. And you just, they had a dorm and they rented out a little boarding school and you flew up there and went to this thing. And so I did that and... I mean, I was doing, I think The Crow had just come out, so I did, like, my first stage performances really were there with, like, some of the older bands, because I went in and I bought that, it was a Joy Division song, Dead Souls, actually, because that was on that Crow soundtrack, there was a Nine Inch Nails version, and I had no idea who Joy Division was or anything like that, but I went in and I wanted to cover that song, because I was like, oh, this is cool, and I remember the teachers were very into that, they were like, that's cool, have you ever heard this other band? So they kind of showed me some of that, but then... As I was doing that same performance, I remember there was this kid, and his name was Yanni, of all things. He was from... but
did he have a mustache?
No, but he was like a young blues kid, and he was kind of a star of that camp, you know? Like, at that camp, he was like the popular kid because he got up and did like some Freddie King, and he did some stuff, and he did really... I think he did some Albert Collins, and he played like a telly kind of in that fashion, like one arm slung, like very into that.
Yeah.
And I was just really blown away by that. Like, I was really into that at that age, you know? Because it was also because I was like, I know that scale.
Yeah,
I can do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was kind of, yeah, an excuse to wank for the next 5 years.
Yeah. And so what did you do? You came back from camp?
I came back from camp, and he was all about Stevie Ray Vaughan, and I told him I lived near Austin, and my sister went to school in Austin. He was like, oh, you got to listen to this and this, and he kind of gave me a bunch of blues records, and I befriended that kid for a little bit, and then I came home, and I started a blues band. I started playing with the local little blues cover band every now and then. A friend of mine's mom sang in, and then I kind of found a band.
God, that sounds terrible.
It was, you can imagine.
Just, you know? I sang in this little blues band, or I played guitar in this little blues band that my friend's mom sang in.
Well,
and
but,
just flashed and you can, like this little, like a Bennigan's.
Well, try and imagine being a 14-year-old, 13-year-old kid sure. trying to do that.
Yeah,
and
man.
At that age, my friends were just like, what is wrong with you? Because I had gone from playing like what they thought was cool music and we could all agree upon. And
to like then, weird.
Why to then I was that? Playing with adults and like, yeah. you know, and it just turned into a weird thing. But that kind of took off, you know, after a little while. So
you could do in the sitting in with the guys, and then eventually you start getting kind of getting around to doing other stuff.
Well, I wound up starting my own kind of blues band with some other people. There was another young blues guitarist in Victoria, of all things, but he was kind of older, and he was very, very famous because, you know, in Victoria, because like Double Trouble had sat in with him once, you know?
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was cool, but it was like a really, Eric G, that was his name. Good guy. They were very nice to me. The family was very nice, but his brother played bass, and he had moved to Austin to kind of be a hire out guitar player. And, you know, just like us all, he was going to come here and make money and
do the thing, yeah.
But I started playing with his brother, and then.
Now the produce manager of Whole Foods.
Yeah. So I started playing with his brother, who had been playing blues bass for him for a long time. And we hit it off, and they kind of found me like a band, but they were playing like the bar circuit in Victoria and doing like the cover gig kind of thing on their own. So we started booking shows, and my dad finally went like, what are you doing? You're playing at that motorcycle bar out on the edge of town on yeah. Friday, and you need me to drive. I'm not gonna let you go to that, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
So, you know,
you don't understand my life.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it was that. And yeah, so I would go do that stuff, and my dad started taking me, and then I think he kind of understood that music a little bit more. So he wound up saying, you know, what can I do to help? And that band dissolved, and he was like, why don't you just, you know, let's just get some musicians that can play, and you just do that, and you can go play your own shows, and you know. So that's what we did, and eventually I started getting into Austin through, you know.
Now, he was bringing you up, right? Uh-huh. Did he bring you to Steamboat? Because I remember, yeah. and I'm yeah. pretty sure it was you, because I remember having a conversation with Danny going like, you know, who is that? No, it's this guy. And he's like, man, his dad like drove him in from yeah. like Victoria my to dad play would, this show.
My dad would drive me down to like, you know, he would drive me to Houston. He would drive me to like Corpus. Hey, we're going to Dr. Rockets tonight to play it. Like, you know, like he would do all of that on like a Tuesday night and then drive me home and go straight to work.
Yeah, what a great guy.
Talk about supporting your kids, you know? It's like, he was really amazing with that. So,
and yeah. so what was happening with you at that time? Were you like, oh yeah, this is going on? Were you playing cover songs? Were you writing original blues music?
I was trying to write original songs.
Were they
songs.
Setting you up with people to write with?
There were people that eventually they started kind of sending me out. Like I was working with John Porter for a while. You know, he did like, which I thought was really cool time because I was at that point finding the Smiths. And
all right, yeah.
He did Meet His Murder, and I was really impressed with that.
Oh,
and,
you were like writing with real guys.
Well, I like when I was about right as that, at the peak of that whole endeavor, like we got this, you know, this manager in LA and things were kind of moving in that direction. Wow. And I was out there working with Tommy Eyre, and his wife was Scarlett Rivera, who played with Dylan for years. So I was like hanging out at their house every day, and what? I was writing with them. And
how old were you?
I was 16 17.
That's pretty cool, you know?
And then it's right when I was I graduated high school, like that summer I kind of graduated early and did that thing, and I had been touring and playing a lot, and I was, you know, I got back and we got that management deal, and I wound up going to LA and was kind of just, you know, staying in a hotel and working with these guys trying to get this deal that was going on at the time. And, you know, and it just didn't work out because I was going through my no guitar solos now, you know.
Like, oh, you switched gears on.
I switched gears on everybody. And I think OK Computer came out that year.
Right.
And that was like, I'm not doing blues anymore.
No.
That was like, this is different.
Yeah.
And I want to do that. And I remember I bought John Porter, who was at the time working with like BB, he did like the BB King Eric Clapton record that came out in the late 90s and stuff. And like he was going on that move. And I was more impressed with his Smiths connection. And,
right.
You know, he was like, you know, ah, that record was, you know, he was not into it and, you know, not into that side of himself. Yeah. And he was very, they just kind of locked me in a room and it got really cliche. And it, the recordings were not good. I didn't like what they did. And they just didn't understand what I wanted to do. And they wanted me to be the blues kid, and I was like,
"What was your dad saying at this time?" I was like, "Oh, really? What? I thought we were going to do this blues thing. What's happening?"
Yeah, everybody
was. What's the plan?
Everybody was very like
a little disappointed.
They were very disappointed. You know, I mean,
they
put
a lot of time into it, and thought you were on a path, and then
that's a big problem. I think when you're a young kid trying to do something, is you're going to shift gears. You're going to your taste is
going
to change.
I think as an artist, you're
as an artist, exactly. It doesn't matter.
And it doesn't even matter if you're a kid.
And you're supposed to be. Yeah. You know, what's the Dylan thing?
The bad thing is that those guys don't live in that kind of world. They're like, wait a minute, we're on a path that looks like it's going somewhere. And you're like, I'm gonna be in a bad mood when we get to where you want me to be.
Exactly.
So I want to go to this other place where I'm gonna be a lot happier. There's a little bit more mystery on this side,
yeah.
And you might not get your, you know, your your investment of time, you know, and effort and all that shit back.
And that's what happened.
I got to be happy.
That's what happened, and the walls kind of fell around the blues thing as I kind of drifted into that, you know, and I was watching, even like watching local guys, like watching Ian Moore at the time and people like
that's what he was doing.
Ian was drifting that whole thing, and I was very into like the stuff that he was. I was like, well, this is cooler than what you were doing.
Yeah.
Like, and nobody else was
or cooler at the time.
It seemed cooler, yeah, at the time, right. It was very inspiring, right. Like just to see somebody step out of that, because right. I didn't know when I was a kid, and I was had a lot of pressure on me, like, well, this is what, you know, people are expecting of you. And
yeah.
And you give into that to an extent, but then I caved and, you know.
Yeah.
I started bringing in my first batch of real songs, which were obviously awful because they were my first batch of real songs.
Right, but they're like, here's my songs.
I was like, here's my songs, and you know, and I want like my vocals to go through a giant delay trail right here, and I want this to happen here, and you right, know, right. And I had this whole picture in my head.
How did you end up, is that the time when you started going to work with Dave McNair?
Yeah, because Dave had done a track for me that I came out on Antone's Records, and that was like on this, you know, young guitar player comp. And Dave was the producer that they just threw in the room with me. Right. It was actually supposed to be Derek O'Brien, and Derek canceled, and Dave came in. I'm like, sure, I'll do it. And so I met Dave, and I just thought Dave was fascinating, because Dave, in one fell swoop, like, I mean, at that time, my tastes were so mixed from being where I was from, and, you know, like I was into blues and I was into like this other
Smiths,
side.
Yeah.
And that stuff was kind of weird, but I was also into like funk a lot at the time. I was into like kind of early, you know, I was into my Stevie Wonder phase and my Sly Stone phase. And like, I was really going through that heavy too. So I remember Dave kind of said, well, what do you like by these bands? And, you know, and in that one day, Dave just kind of gave me, he's like, well, you like the Beatles? I was like, not really. You know, I don't know.
Right.
Now, anybody that knows me would think that's crazy. I'm such a Beatles nut. But it's like, you know, back then, Dave handed me my first, you know, like he gave me Revolver. He gave me Pet Sounds. He gave me Talking Book. He gave me
Jesus.
He gave me Loveless.
He gave you a life.
He gave me a life, exactly. and he gave me Armed Forces, too, like things that still resonate so strong. Wow. I think that group of recordings probably resonated stronger with me in everything I've ever done since, probably than any group of recordings I've ever been handed.
Right.
You know, like in one fell swoop, that was like, my ears were just like totally changed.
Yeah.
You know,
and you were living in San Marcos.
When I graduated, I kind of moved up there because I was, you know, I was wanting to be more involved in things, you know,
yeah.
and that was right after that stopped. This was right before I met you. This was all getting to be leading up to me meeting you about that time.
That's because what this whole show is about. No, I'm joking.
What was funny though is, yeah, I remember because that band fell apart, and I was working with Dave. And that's when that Wake band started.
Right.
Because I went around and I wanted to work with people my own age again. And I lost all that management. And I lost, you know, and I was all excited, like, I'm loading my gear now. You know, because I had, like, people doing all that for me and all that stuff.
What a dumb thing to get excited about.
Yeah, tell me about it. It's like,
you're 31 now. How much do you like schlepping your shit around?
Exactly.
I hate it.
Yeah, no, it's the worst. But that was like all exciting things to me at the time, and like booking my first little punk rock tour and the car breaking down.
Yeah, I remember you guys were going out and doing stuff.
We were trying, and you know, and it was just me like not knowing what I was doing, and the internet was there at this point, but it wasn't
kicking up.
It was kicking up, and it was starting to. So it was like that was my first experience of like, well, I found this guy in New Orleans who works at this record shop, and I emailed him, and he hooked me up with this band, you know, like, and we've got an 8 o'clock slot on a Tuesday night at this nowhere bar in New Orleans, and that was every night of the tour.
Right. You
know? Nowhere slots with nowhere bands playing to five people, you know?
But you were out there, and you were doing it, we were having a good time, because I remember you were always excited to be doing it.
I was so excited to be doing it. I still am, you know?
Yeah.
I'm still excited that I get to do it still.
Yeah. So how did we meet? How did that happen?
There was that girl that was helping us out, Georgette was, I think, her name. Do you remember? She worked for, what was that disc printing company?
Oh, yeah.
And she heard Georgette, that you got...
She was like a hippie.
She was, yeah, she was kind
of... Very cool.
Very cool hippie chick that kind of was like helping out with... And she, for some reason, liked the band and just said, oh, well, let me help you guys book and manage a little. And she was kind of getting involved and helping us do things, trying to be involved in bands.
Yeah.
And that band was kind of dissolving, and it was just a bunch of really young kids that just couldn't really commit to things. And
the Wake.
Yeah. And it was just dissolving, and... And I remember she heard that you were looking for another guitar player. I really liked Peep Show.
Okay.
And so she got in touch with you for me.
Okay.
Because I asked her to.
That makes sense. Okay, so you were the guy. And then you said, hey, tell this guy
I said, tell this guy I want to play guitar for him. And, you know, that I'm...
What did I say? Just, oh, yeah, okay, you can.
You just like showed up. You're like, yeah, cool. You and A&R came out and sat with me at that little, in my little 8-track studio, and like, we kind of played over the record a little bit, and you were like, cool.
But I went to go see The Wake.
I remember seeing it at the Vibe.
Yeah, remember, because I remember thinking that that was a weird place for you guys to be playing, and also...
Very weird.
And Danny was running it then.
Danny was running it.
And I think he was like, hey, guys got to play here. That place... I even talked to Danny about it. That place weirded me out.
It did. It was a little bit weird.
So then we started playing together.
Yeah.
And you came in, like, kind of, we were just exhausted in this place where we had lost our deal, put out another record, and just, like, terrible. I do remember, though, didn't we play some gig in New Orleans that started at, like, 3 a.m?
Yeah. And I was thoroughly excited, but I remember you guys were like, hey, man, I'll see you guys later. We're going to go hang out. Because I wasn't 21, and you guys left me. You guys did that to me in Oklahoma City, too, one night.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jonas. No, that's another. Yeah, I could see having a couple of drinks and going like, "What? He's not. Oh, fuck. Whatever, man. He's got to. He can find some." No. That's... So, but we had a good time. Then after that, you had another band that I liked a lot. Right after that.
Well, that was. Well, you got me the gig doing the Indochine thing, and then Lomita started.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay, I'm thinking of The Wake still. Okay.
Yeah.
So then,
well, I started a band called My Violent Life in between that. That was like an instrumental thing.
Right,
like,
I liked that band a lot.
I was getting into like, that's really the last time I like really did anything that was me, but I was really into, that was like that whole Mogwai like ambient thing.
Right.
Like I was really finding Eno and like listening to music for airports for hours on end going like, this is incredible the way he just holds this one note.
Yeah.
You know? Like boom, for, you know, 10 minutes of that. And well, the minimalism thing grabbed me at the time though.
So, I heard somebody say the other day on a podcast, everyone gives Eno all this credit for being this, but no one ever says that he's the godfather for like shitty new age music.
He really is. I use that equation all the time, but I also think, you know, for every, you know, Robert Plant's responsible for Axl Rose. You
know? Have you met him?
I have not gotten to meet Robert. I hear he's around town all the time. That's pretty awesome. Who would have thought that 10 years ago that we would have members of Led Zeppelin hanging around town? Austin's grown so strange.
That's a good way to describe it. It has grown strange. So, wait, I was going to ask you this because... Okay, so I was in this band, Indochine, that after Gowdy... I got in this band playing guitar, and it was the band that preceded Alpha Rev.
Yeah.
Casey McPherson's band. I got in it. It had a big buzz about it. They made this record with Lars Goransson. I went on the road with them. I played with them for like a long time for somebody outside of the four of those guys to be in that band. I was like 9 months or something. And then
you lasted longer than me, man.
And then to get out of it, when I had to quit, I had to have like a good guy. And I think I called you before I even quit. Said, I'm going to quit.
Yeah.
Can I say you're the guy?
Yeah.
And you were like, fuck yeah, because they were doing real well.
Yeah.
I remember flash forward even like a month. I can't remember if I saw you or if you.
Oh my God. That was the craziest.
Yeah, it was at Lucky Lounge. And you guys had gone out on the road. And this guy, the bass player, who I'm not going to say his name, but that guy. Always had like this inflated thing about it and was always on the they had such a jive talking like, oh, everything's amazing, oh, the tour was sell out, but meanwhile everyone's totally getting like pawning their guitars to get, make rent and everything. But they did have a level of jive, and that guy was the jivest of all. Oh, too bad you quit when you did, because this last tour was totally sold out. I'm like, oh yeah, right. And what, they had like some fight in the thing. Casey told the story on here. And were just like the innocent bystander. But I remember going
horrified.
Like, I remember you saying, oh, that car just hit that bug. I remember you saying, you told me they were crazy, but you didn't tell me they were that crazy.
Yeah.
How long were you in it? 3 months?
I lasted 3 months. But you know, that really trailed a lot of history for me, because that was right when I was starting Lomita. That was kind of the beginning of Lomita too, was going on right before I left on that run and did that, I met Ricky and all that. But then what was funny was I was in that group and I did that, and I'm still kind of mad at you for that.
I don't blame you. I'm still kind of mad about that. That was literally the darkest.
It was a
group of people.
It was a dark scenario.
Together, it was a dark scene.
Ironically, you know, Nathan was out at a Plastic Habit show recently.
Really?
And we reconnected and we talked and, you know, and we had a good time and
he
nice.
Cleaned up his act and he came did. Out. I think they all did.
They all did. They all did.
Yeah. They're all cool.
No, they're all super cool now. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, I mean, I've had run-ins with every one of them. Casey, you know, was the most after a while.
Cause you played with Casey?
I did the Alpharev thing off and on, and it was never my thing, and I think that was kind of my issue with it, was I just never could connect with... The music wasn't for me, and it was not that... Casey writes great, and I loved that, but it was just not for me at the time. So I think I constantly had a... I never committed or stayed with that. You know, I just couldn't do it. It was always kind of, yeah, it's not what I want to be doing right now, you know? But he was always Casey's Casey.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Great, nice,
great musician.
Sweetheart guy, amazing singer, amazing songwriter. I will do nothing but talk.
Yeah, me too, man. He's one of my best friends. That's so Lomita was one of my favorites.
That was one of my favorites too.
I got a feeling inside of my head.
You know, it's so funny that song is the one that's doing that. You know, somebody emailed me the other night that record was getting like a bunch of airplay in like Tennessee the other night.
That's cool.
It keeps on, like, I keep getting weird emails about that thing. And, you know, I know it's just funny. Like, I think everybody involved in that project kind of views that as like that was a really neat band to have been involved in.
It was a neat band to go see.
It was a fun thing. And I think everybody in it was really good. And it was just a really
I loved wonderful... you and Ricky and playing. And I love, of course, always Sweeney.
Sweeney
the
and
best.
And Dorian was great.
Dorian.
And when Davey was in it, Davey was great.
Yeah, Davey's great. What's Davey doing?
Davey is living in Odessa and has a baby and working.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah. Davey's not really playing much. He's just kind of being a daddy.
Too bad. That guy's a great, great, great drummer, man.
He's hands down, you know, he's one of the best rock drummers I've ever seen in my life.
Dorian's a great drummer.
Dorian's
great
incredible. We had, you know... we had a great line of drummers in Lomita because we had four or five run through that band aside.
Oh, yeah. I remember there was a bearded guy that kind of hunched over that was kind of Ringo-y. And,
that was James.
That was James, who was the daddy, of, baby daddy of
Misty's baby. Misty. Yeah, who played in the White White Lights later. Yeah.
Yeah.
And James played for us for a while because James was in My Violent Life, so it was Misty.
I loved his drumming.
James is great. Well, you know, he plays in Mr. Lewis and the Funeral Five.
Yeah.
I think they're one of the best bands in town still. I love them. I think Greg's amazing. He's the Tom Waits of Austin that nobody's given credit to.
Yeah, that's pretty nice to say.
It's like, you know, I really feel like he should be playing to bigger crowds. I get like really bummed when I'm like, why are there not like people falling over for you? Because he's really got an amazing thing.
So what was the thing that kind of fell apart with Lomita? Just creative differences, time, too much time together, too much
ego.
Work.
Too many people.
I could
with
see
egos.
That. That's a lot of egos.
There was a lot of egos. I mean, you know, and we were just young and
younger then too. Yeah,
younger at that point and feeling like we were older, but we were still really young. Yeah, you know,
I sure love Ricky.
Ricky's amazing.
I love all the dudes. What's the guy Ricky's, that played bass? That also,
Dan. Dan's great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Dan's
and Dan
fantastic.
Was in the White Lights for a long time too. But that was really kind of Ricky left to go do the pedal steel thing, and I was going through
and
a lot.
That's so
of,
funny. Remember when we were doing that album together, and yeah. you were like, "Oh, I'll get Ricky to come in and play." And I was like, "Well, man, don't you have to be really good to play that instrument?" And you're like, "Dude, like literally, he did. He literally is a guy that just kind of went off and
that's all
like
he did.
That, like locked himself in a room yeah. like 12-year-old Jonas.
He did." Yeah. And that's what he did, and that's why he's so good.
He's fucking
know?
Really good.
Like, Ricky was not the same guitar player or musician that he is today when I first met him. He really...
No.
He really... Something clicked, and that guy is the best musician I know. You know? Like, he's really just... He's a very unique musician, and no wonder he's getting the gigs he does and does
yeah,
what he does.
Yeah, cool gig.
Yeah, you know? It's like, no wonder yeah. he is, because he's amazing.
Yeah.
It's like... But yeah,
You guys get to still hang out much?
Not as much. He still sends me little iPhone demos, and, you know, we still, I think we're still, at the end of the day, we still trust each other's judgment a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, we worked on the Happenins record, and I produced his brother's record, uh-huh. and we work together just, we always randomly.
How's his brother's record?
It's great. I don't know why it's not out yet. Steven's amazing. Steven's a fantastic songwriter himself, and great voice, and just
it
as unique
like
of a
seems like that's
presence.
A record that might get a little notoriety because he's kind of an actor guy.
I don't know. I hope so. He's just got to put it out, you know? I really hope so. He's amazing. It's one of the better records I've gotten to work on. The songs are incredible, you know? That was a tough record because I was in the middle of the fire. You know, the studio burned down like a week when we thought we were kind of done. And we were just like, okay, just got to mix. Mm-hmm. And I just grabbed a hard drive and I had nowhere to work. I had no setup. So we just waited and waited and waited. And you know, and he would come in and we would do like vocals
so
in the music
it's
lab.
It's going to be like a couple years old.
It's several years old, and I lost perspective on it for a while, and it's a hard record to revisit. I think it was for him, too, because we both had to sit on it and listen to it, and, you know, it's a great record.
Goddamn
dude.
Fires.
That was just a weird thing, because it really did, like, that was a record that took the most toll from that, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was a patient soul with me and was just like, rather than just going, can I get the tracks and go to somebody else, you know?
Yeah.
He stuck through it with me, and... very nice of a guy, you know, because we just wound up, I mean, we were doing vocals in like music lab rooms. Okay, the metal band's stopping. Sing your vocals.
Oh, God, yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. it's torturous.
Yeah, so we were just kind of doing that and like, you know, going to borrow time. Like my friend Steve Ciricia runs a studio out in Bastrop. He's a great producer himself. And Steve would kind of donating time to me, like just to kind of, okay, you can come in and he has one more song that he wants to track now and wants to replace this other song. We'd go in and book a day, and then it would sit for 4 months until we could get more time and he could fly back, and, you know, it was that kind of a thing.
Right.
So it was just really nipped at, and then it was like the first thing, I mixed that record while my studio was still being bit, so I mixed it in my garage. Mm. Like, I put the console up in the garage, and I just plugged it all in and just kind of went like, okay, I figure out, I didn't know Pro Tools really, I was coming from Nuendo, so I was just like learning new software, just like,
right,
you know, relying totally on like, you know, the console.
When we did that record, you were working on Nuendo?
Yeah, it was a Nuendo, not Pro Tools. We transferred it over when you went to Lars, but yeah, like that was kind of whatever he was using. Yeah, I just gave you, you know, Fairwave files, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That stuff works. Wow, so let me ask you a question. What was the, why did you go out to Bastrop? Did you... You like
well,
the it's
no,
cheaper.
There was family things and tied to it
okay.
originally because my folks moved out that way. At the time period, my sister was going through some stuff and needed help, and you know she was a single mom and just kind of living at home, and she needed help. And I think I was like, okay, well, I'll go out there in case she needs somebody to
yeah.
babysit.
Yeah, you guys banded
here.
Together as a family. That's a good
and
thing
then,
to do. That's good to know
yeah.
that there's people out there that still do that shit. They don't just like, oh, fucking, you know, maybe one of your friends will help you out.
Yeah, no, and then, you know, my dad at the time was, you know, having some heart issues and other things, and, you know, and it was a little...
It's time. It was time to get together as a family. Time to come together.
Me personally, I think I had been a little. I'd been the selfish musician, kind of doing my thing for several years. So I wanted to be out there, to be there whenever they needed, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how things were going to pan out with that, and that just.
And turns out you like it.
I do like it. It's a little tough right now. I think, you know, I love it out there. The city's great. I'm getting involved in the city. I'm helping do things down there, which is fun, you know, and it's really neat. But I'm definitely, you know, a musician. My life's still in Austin, so there's a lot of, the commuting's heavy, but it's, you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, I live in multiple places.
Yeah.
So.
And so you teach here?
I still teach in Austin a lot, yeah.
At the School of Music?
No, I'm no longer there. I'm doing light teaching, like, privately with a few students that just kind of, you know, that were important to me. But I really am focused on production mostly at this point. So teaching's a side thing. It's kind of supplemental, and production's really full force right now.
That's great.
Ups and downs.
Yeah, no, but it's great. It's great to have work like that.
It is. It is. And like I said, I'm working on some cool records, and that's fun. It's like, and then, you know.
And you got the Plastic Habit. It's called Out of the Airlock.
Yeah, that's the new release.
You got the artwork together?
Yeah. Well, it's wrapping up this week. My girlfriend's doing that. She's
You have a girlfriend?
Mm-hmm. I do. I have a really cool Russian girlfriend.
Whoa! Very cool. Did you import her?
I imported her. She was mail order.
my old girlfriend Sandy, her dad imported this lady.
Oh, well, that's awesome. No, she's not important. Actually, she's an amazing girl. Her mom's an opera. Her father's an opera singer, and her stepdad's an opera singer, and then her mother's a classical pianist. And yeah, cool girl. She's doing all the artwork. She does a lot of graphic design. She runs short indies actually as well. That little short independent film festival in town.
Oh, cool.
Her and JJ Castillo.
I love JJ.
Yeah, her and JJ run that. They run short indies together.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So, is there anything I'm missing? Are you doing anything that I need to know about?
That's just that.
June 22nd.
I'm Frank's. Next, if this comes out before, then May 16th. I don't know if it will.
May 16th. That's lost fucking John Toll's interview. Sorry. Oh. I don't want to lay my failures on you, which obviously I think I have throughout our friendship. I don't want to burden you with my failure, bro. Remember Cousin Michael?
Oh, man.
That's
who
I need to have on my podcast.
You need to get Cousin Michael.
No, bro. every once in a while, I'll meet someone, I'll be talking to them, and they'll go like, oh, I knew a Cuban guy. I don't know what happened to him, man. He was here for a while. He was kind of a dude you'd see late at night around town. His name was Michael. Jesus. No, bro. And then they're like, no, that's him. That's him. Like, yeah. No, he's gone. He's gone. June 22nd, Frank's.
Mm-hmm.
What day on night of the week is that?
That's either a Friday or a Saturday, I do.
Oh,
believe.
Great. So yeah. it's like
a weekend.
Do you like going there for shows? You like playing shows there?
I love playing shows there. And, you know, it's just because I'm friends with Glenn. And
who's that? The guy?
Glenn, he books there, but Glenn was in Stereo's a Lie. Remember that band? Davey played in that band for a little bit. And I did some production with them. And they were they're a good band. He was also in the Four Thieves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's like Glenn was in that band too, and they kind of, you know, he started Stereo when he got here, and Nick went and did his thing, and you know,
yeah.
But Glenn books that show, so Glenn is, you know, hooking me up and taking chance on a band that nobody knows, just like everybody that's giving me anything right now, you know.
Hey, oh, that means that I'm giving you your big break.
You're giving
your
me
big
a
big media break.
You're giving
in
us
this
you're
media
giving,
outlet.
Yeah. You're giving a media. You're giving me some media.
And so. People can find you at Jonas. Is it Jonas Wilson?
There's people can find the Plastic Habit at plastichabit.com.
Okay,
and then JonasWilsonMusic.com.
Uh-huh. JonasWilsonMusic.com.
JonasWilsonMusic.com.
Plastic Habit.
Plastichabit.com.
Mm-hmm. The Plastic Habit.
The Plastic Habit.
And that's what you're going by. Is there anything I'm missing? I like you, Jonas. I always have. I do.
I don't think if there's anything I miss yet. I love
you, Jonas. I'm trying to think of another good. I do remember when we went to. We went somewhere and you were old enough to drink, and I think you were drunk.
Probably.
Yeah. I remember you were drunk and just like, it was awesome. Because it was the first time you were ever just like, it was totally legal. Like the drinking age was still 18 or whatever there, right?
Yeah.
In like that was Baton Rouge.
Yeah, that's probably where it was. Oh, man. Yeah.
Dude, that was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago now, man. I'm 31.
Yeah. I know. And you were 19 then? Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, it's so weird. I'm 31 too. And we'll leave it at that. No, I'm pretty old. I think I say my age on here enough. I can't believe I erased John Toll's interview. I'm going to stop talking about it. Jonas, June 22nd.
Yeah.
Frank's.
Yep.
If you're in Austin, Texas, and people can find JonasWilsonMusic.com and ThePlasticHabit.com.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Facebook and all the other things.
Yeah. Just Google it, probably.
Just Google it.
Just Google it.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Been hiding from the rain.
All right, that's from Jonas's new album, The Plastic Habit. That's the name of the band, the project, or whatever he calls himself. Anyway, I want to thank Jonas for coming by. He's a great producer, a great engineer. If you ever get a chance to work with him, find him, work with him. I had a great time. I made a great record with him. It's called El Payaso, Johnny Gowdy and the Little Champions, El Payaso. We did that record together. It was a great time. And, you know, do it. Check it out. Go to that release show at Frank. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to me, and I love doing this show. So what you got to do is go to iTunes, subscribe, also rate it. Get into it, man. It's going to help us because we're going to start moving into doing some advertisement, and it's going to keep the show free for you. As long as we get good ratings everywhere, we'll be doing well. All right? Thank you so much for listening. Here's a little bit more of The Plastic Habit. Let's do this. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.